Thanks for downloading this podcast from Love Sport Radio. For more, go to lovesportradio.com for all the latest podcasts, news, and views. Or for more, follow us at Love Sport Radio on Twitter.
Hello and welcome to the Millwall Fan Show here on Love Sport Radio. You're with me, Johnny Burrow and Darren James and Ted Robinson and, of course, Jeff Burnage, former Millwall chairman. All of them of No One Likes Us Talking. Those are the rules, Jeff. I can say it once and only once. I've had my ration for the show. We're kicking the show off, of course, with transfer rumours. There don't seem to have been any rationing for Harris in the transfer market. We're hearing that he could have made a bid for Jamal Lowe. The forward scored 17 in League One for Portsmouth this season. Would that be a good piece of business?
Well, he looks a decent player, doesn't he, Johnny? The only thing is, I was reading about, I believe, whether these figures are right, that we've offered in the region of 1.5, but Portsmouth want double that, which shows you how tough the market is, in the sense that there's a guy who's not really proven at Championship level, and Portsmouth are asking for £3 million. But what I would say is, if that is the case that we have had a look at, we're looking in the right areas, because he's a good young lad who certainly... I think he had a little bit of Kenny Jackett's magic dust sprinkled on him, because he's all of a sudden come out of wherever he was before to look like a proper, real performer. He may be done to him what he done to Ben Thompson, Kenny Jackett. But I like the look of him when I see him playing for Portsmouth. But to score 17 goals in any division, it shows you've got a bit of ability about you. So I think Neil, if that is the case, Neil's looking in the right areas with someone like him.
And it's 17 goals without being a centre-forward as well, which is quite something.
Yeah, I saw him play a few times for Hampton and Richmond. He was very young then. He had been at a pro club, and I'm sorry to say that I can't remember which one.
Barnet,
right. And Alan Dowson, Bill's former left-back, was the manager of Hampton and Richmond at the time. He's a good friend of mine. Incomprehensible, because you can't get past his Gateshead accent. God knows what his team talks at half-time are like. I should imagine the players can't understand a word he's saying, but he's very successful. He moved on to Woking last summer and instantly got them promoted to the National League. So Al knows what he's doing, and he told me that Jamal was a player, and I think Portsmouth paid £60,000 for him.
It's a good piece of business.
He plays wide on the right in a front three.
Yeah.
And that's a bit of a modern position, isn't it? But whether Millwall can seriously consider paying £1.5 million for a player, I don't know. We'll wait and see.
I think Ted's point of the value is quite an interesting one. Millwall bidding £1.5 million. Portsmouth, of course, wanting £3 million. We're seeing this at all the divisions, where Palace want £100 million for Wilfried Zaha. Has the market gone mad, or are clubs just not going to get what they're asking for?
They're not going to get it. No chance. And, you know, Jamal's got talent, but £1 million would have been a good shout. Anything more than that, I can't see it. I don't think anyone's going to pay £3 million for him. He's a League One player. The team didn't get promotion, although they had a good go, thanks to Ben Thompson. Plug.
well done, Dale.
Thank you. I can't see it. The prices, as you just asked, I mean, they're absolutely crazy. And obviously, we're not in the big league, and money's hard to come by.
I would think, I don't know, but I would think he's got another year on his contract. I don't know his exact age, but he'd be around 23,
yep,
something like that. So it'd be interesting to see if he's 24 by next June, which would make him a free agent.
Yeah,
completely. So something may well go on there.
He's actually 24 now.
Is he? So he could move at the end of his contract, which I think is another year, without a transfer fee. Portsmouth will have to decide whether, if they get an offer now, it's worth their while taking that rather than risk losing him for nothing in another year. Mm. But he's a talented player. I'm amazed he scored 17 goals. I saw him play. I didn't think he'd be a heavy goal scorer in League One, but it's lovely to be proved wrong. He's a nice kid and he's done well, and Portsmouth, by the way, is a proper club. Mm-hmm. Can I pay tribute to Portsmouth, seeing as we're passing?
You can.
Many years ago, Fans may remember us getting banned for one game from the FA Cup, 1978. Do you remember that, when we played Ipswich?
Yep.
And the FA decided that we should not be allowed in the FA Cup. My dad was chair at the time. We got that overturned. But they also said we had to play a game on our opponent's ground. We had the den closed for a game. Who do you think would have us? What local police force was going to say, oh, yeah, we don't mind having Millwall for a game? Portsmouth,
yeah.
The only team that would, right? And I'll always be grateful, because we were in a hole there. And so thank you, Portsmouth. Look forward to seeing you play in the Championship one day soon.
Absolutely, yeah. I hadn't realised they'd done that. That's quite some story. Not just potential entries to Millwall. There have been exits confirmed already. David Martin has gone to West Ham, following in his dad's footsteps. Are you sad to see him go?
I am. He was a good leader. He very vocal. I think all teams need a good vocal goalie. He was that person. He came in and played, about 15 games, did very well. I'm sorry to see him go. Quite crazy that he's going to be the third choice goalkeeper, but money talks again. It comes back to money.
The thing is, Dale, at the start of last season, when you come to a new season, everything's up in the air. Who's going to be your number one keeper and whatever? Dave Martin come and done a fantastic job towards the end of the season for us. But we've got to remember, at the start of last season, he was our third goalkeeper because we had Ben Amos and Jordan Archer in front of him, and he was definitely third in the pecking order. So you've got to have a reality check. For a guy like David Martin, who's, 34, is he?
33, I think.
33, that sort of age. He's getting the opportunity, and he could well be thinking to himself, I could go to West Ham in the Premier League. Obviously, he's on more money. A third start off as third goalkeeper, I might well finish up like I did this year. You know, so I can't blame him for going one little bit, to be quite honest. And I for one, say thank you very much, Dave, and happy days for you. Move to a Premier club in the twilight of your career. Make the most of it.
Well, no one's dared say what club he went to so far. Is it
West
forbidden? Spen. Is it forbidden vocabulary? No, I asked myself, did I think Neil was going to bring in a new first-choice goalkeeper? I think he intends to.
Yeah.
That means David Martin was going to be his number two goalkeeper. Right, and so it happens. He's 34, I think. If he's got a good contract, more power to his elbow. I've got no problem with him going. Am I heartbroken? No. It'll all depend on the calibre of the goalkeepers in between now and August.
They've been talking about the Ipswich guy, Bob. I can never pronounce his name. The Polish guy,
Bielkowski.
Evidently we're in for him. That's the rumours.
You're going to have to work on saying his name, Ted, in that case.
Yeah.
What do you think, Darren, about that one?
He's okay, but I've got a couple of names here which haven't been mentioned at all. One has. I like Frank Fielding, who plays for Bristol City.
Yeah, yeah.
He's on a free. He's 31 years of age. Played a lot of games over the last 5-6 years. He had been at Derby previously.
Yep.
I also like two young guys. One is Matt Macy. He was on loan at Plymouth last season, Luton the season before, 24 years of age, 6'6".
From
Arsenal
where?
Goalkeeper.
Arsenal
yeah.
Yep.
So I rate him highly. And the other one that hasn't been mentioned at all, and I've been watching him for a couple of years, is a Republic of Ireland lad. He was called up into the Republic of Ireland squad in March. His name's Mark Travers. He made his debut for Bournemouth against Spurs last game of the season. He's a year younger than Ramsdale, and I believe he's a much better goalkeeper, and I feel that possibly Bournemouth will let Ramsdale go because they know they've got this Travers in reserve coming up.
Yeah.
So but I'd rather have Travers.
Yeah.
Some interesting names there, Darren. You've either done your homework in the last hour or you have been really following this, one or the other. But
no comment.
Ramsdale, we discussed a couple of weeks ago when I was here. He did play against us for Wimbledon in the FA Cup and did very well. But it's interesting what you say. I noticed that Mark Travers came in the team at the end and I thought they might let Ramsdale go. It never occurred to me they might let Mark Travers go out on loan. But I'm going to say what I think will be a minority view. We've got to make sure the goalkeeper we sign is better than Jordan Archer because I think he was underrated. We'll see what happens with his career. I'll be proved right or wrong. But obviously the time had come for a parting of the ways.
But he was a Scottish goalkeeper. Never trust him.
Never trust him. Talking of transfer dealings, we've had one confirmed. Real Madrid have confirmed the signing of Eden Hazard on a five-year deal.
I thought you were going to say Ben Thompson for a minute. You had me really worried.
Reported fee of $88 million could rise to $130 million with add-ons. It's not really a big enough name for Millwall, is it? Coming up, talking of star forwards, we'll be talking to Paul Moody, former Millwall striker.
This is Love Sport.
You're listening to the Millwall Fan Show here on Love Sport Radio. And if you remember Jackie Knight and the Gambian school children from last week, the wonderful African kids chanting "No One Likes Us." If you want to donate a Millwall shirt or indeed shirts for the children, you can do so. You've just got to go ahead to the centre or post them to Millwall Community Trust, Lewisham Lions Centre, Ballina Road, Bermondsey, London, SE16 3LD. If you do that, it won't just be chanting, it'll be full kit as well. That's what we want to see. And a man who's worn Millwall kit and of course had his name chanted many a time is Paul Moody, former Millwall striker. I'm delighted to say he joins us on the line now. Good evening, Paul, thanks for joining us. What do you make of Millwall strikers this season?
To be honest, I haven't really watched many of the games, but the games I've gone up there, we've been a bit lightweight, to be honest. I think generally the team needs a little bit of a shake-up for next season if we want to stay in the Championship.
Evening, Paul. It's Jeff Burnage.
Hello, Jeff. How are you?
Do I get this right? Did you move... you've moved up north of London now, haven't you? Did you tell me the other week?
No. I'm still down in on the outskirts of Portsmouth.
Still down on the outskirts of Portsmouth, right? Okay. Well, I know that's your neck of the woods. It's great to hear you again. Always nice to see you at a game. And I can remember well the day you signed. Presumably, you can as well.
Yes, same day as Sean Dyche, and I remember coming up to the training ground and nothing but good memories about the club.
I tell you what, Paul, Jeff was telling me earlier he'd done your medical. I didn't even know he was a doctor. I mean, what was that? A quick beer down a pub and make sure you can lift it all right?
You touch your toes? Like
they took me down to some dodgy surgery down a road and they never picked up half the problems what I had.
We did that, Paul, because we knew you wouldn't pass, so my job was to take you somewhere where they'd look the other way.
It's a great signing. Really was.
Yeah, but I come good in the end.
You certainly did. You certainly did. They were good times.
We'd like Neil to do a bit of business like that again, Paul. You and Sean, both of you turned out to be classic Millwall players, if you don't mind me saying so. Hey, what's happened to him, by the way, that Dyche? Where is he now?
I don't know. He's managing some Northern team, apparently. probably worth a couple of million as well.
Yeah. So what big memory of your time, what one thing would you pick out, Paul, and say, I remember that game or that goal or that evening out or whatever it is? Can you come up with something that would be jump into your head, first of all?
I remember decorating your place in Lower Rush.
Shush.
Is it time for story time, Paul?
Well, if you've got time for it, but yeah, Jeff got me up to his place in... near Bishop's Wharf, not far from sort of about half an hour from where I live, and nice little swimming pool in the garden. I think I spent half the time in there, naked.
I bet you still got the invoice on you, haven't you? I bet you ain't paid you yet.
No, I'm still waiting for that now. But that's good. Oh, so many good times at the club. Starting from day one, the first game I played there was Cardiff away. Proper experience. There was a lot of talk about there's going to be trouble going on off the field, and it sort of turned into it. The game ended up 1-1, and after the game there was loads of fighting going on and whatever, and being one of the older players, I had to take the team for a walk down after the game, and gone through the players' tunnel to sort of lead the players out. This is sort of 10-15 minutes after the game, after we've had our chat and whatever. And in the tunnel there was loads of Millwall fans. There was seats being ripped up and chucked at them, and all sorts of stuff going on. There were like women with kids in there, and it was a little bit naughty, to be fair. And the stewards closed the doors were about 10 feet high, and the stewards sort of closed the doors and didn't let us out. Me and Tony Warner pushed them out of the way, opened the doors back up, got all the players. We ended up with about 20, 30 fans in our dressing room after the game. We were having showers in the bath. It was unbelievable. And it was like, what have I come to here? It was different.
It was a lovely place to go, that old Ninian Park ground, wasn't it?
Yeah, I have good memories from there. I scored a hat-trick for Oxford there. But now the Cardiff boys are a little bit lively and whatever. We knew it's going to be a bit of a tough game, pulling off the field. So, it was an experience.
I remember two games with you, Paul. One where you scored a hat-trick. I think we remember that one. We won 5-0. I think, was it Oldham that we played? I remember at the end of the season.
Reading.
And you scored your hat-trick. Also, there was one where you got sent off. And I think Neil got sent off with you. Was it at Bristol City? My word, what a night that was.
It was. I think it was one of our games where we sort of needed to win. We were up near the top, and I think we lost. I think Neil got sent off first, and then I ended up getting sent off, and we done a bit of damage between us in the dressing room after the game, to be fair, which was a little bit naughty. But I think that game... I ended up getting because I got a three-match ban for it, I ended up getting that overturned.
Yes.
So I remember going up to Lancaster Gate, whatever, and watched the video. And there were probably three or four blokes in their 90s watching this video, and they sort of couldn't see what was going on. They said they overturned it.
Yeah, I remember, because it was a vital time in the season, wasn't it? And we was worried that we'd lost our strike force for
Paul, we just showed them another incident that wasn't connected with the one where you get sent off and they fell for it.
Just to ask you, Paul, it's Darren. We met up at the No One Likes Us Talking. We did an interview recently for the podcast. Good to hear you on the air, Paul. Lovely. When you went to Lancaster Gate, I heard the only reason they let you off and overturned it was because you offered to decorate the dressing room. Is that right?
I did, yeah. I had to do it for free. But they let me off for free games. So, it was a good deal in the end.
That was true, right. I've got a house. I don't suppose you could come round and decorate my house, could you?
Yeah, not a problem. But
to send him off first.
nice to reveal where the FA deal with their suspensions of people.
Tell us what it was like playing with Neil, Paul. What was he like as a partner up front?
Brilliant. I mean, I've played with a few players over the years, and some you sort of hit it off with. It depends what style of football your team's playing. And I think big man, little man, and we both come from non-league as well. And I think that had a lot to do with it. Once I got that chance coming out of non-league, I didn't do it until I was 24. And I thought, I've got that chance now, I'm going to take it. And I think it's probably the same for Neil. And we just sort of clicked, and we spoke about things in training, whatever, like when the goalie kicks the ball out, I used to get most of the headers of that, and I'd always tell him I'd head it towards the goal. Wherever I was on the pitch, I'd head it towards the goal, which to me was like common sense, you know. Whereas some players would flick it wherever. But we just sort of had a bit of an understanding there. And I was looking back at some of the old videos, and he did set a lot of goals up for me as well.
Did you ever think to yourself that this guy's going to be a manager one day, Paul? Did you ever? And I've always thought of Neil as being a sort of intelligent guy, thinker of the game, but I'm not sure I was ever convinced this early days that he was going to be a manager.
No, I mean, looking at the comparison between him and Sean Dyche, I mean, Dyche was like a policeman. I mean, I used to stay around his flat on a Friday night before games and that, and he'd be like, when I come in, he'd take the shoes off out the door, you know, he's one of their... he was very different to Neil, and obviously their management ways are different, but didn't really see Neil as being a manager, to be honest.
Paul, lovely to speak to you. Thanks so much. Lovely to hear first-hand accounts of Neil Harris as well. Thanks for your time. Paul Moody there, former Millwall striker. We've, of course, heard a positive account of the Millwall boss there, but not everyone online, as is always the case, is being quite so generous. He's taking quite a lot of stick on social media, and coming up, is any of it justified?
This is Love Sport.
It's the Millwall Fan Show here on Love Sport Radio. You're with me, Johnny Burrow and Darren James, Ted Robinson and Jeff Burnage of No One Likes Us Talking. Neil Harris has been getting a right kicking on social media. People saying there should be transfer deals completed already. Others saying he's just not up to the job. Is any of that fair?
No, not really. I feel for Neil. He's got one of the hardest jobs of the 92 managers in the top four leagues. He's got a massive responsibility to please the best fans, allegedly, in the land. He does his very best. He puts 100% and more into everything he does. He knows what it's like to play for Millwall. He knows that it's about the mentality of the player as well as the ability. And we've got to remember that. The supporters have to remember this. We could sign Ronaldo and Messi if someone gave us millions and millions of pounds. But if they've got the right mentality, if they don't know what it is like to play for Millwall, then really it would be money down the drain. So I do believe that Neil, I love him to bits, as most of us do. There's always going to be people criticising a manager, even when people win in other divisions, leagues and cups, they're moaning about things. So now we can't please all the people all the time. But having lots of money to spend is all well and good, but without the right coaches also, it will be wasted. And my only concern is the coaching at Millwall. You can't coach heart and guts. And there are some players there which he's got rid of in the last few weeks. And I think certainly there's going to be a three or four more out the door. But Neil's got a really hard job.
So you're blaming the playing staff rather than the manager?
Yes, I am, yeah.
Ted, what's your take?
Yeah, I think that's... I mean, the transfer business, I mean, it's ridiculous to think that they should be having deals done already because that some of the Premier clubs have only just given out the releases of who they're letting go, you know. So, I mean, I don't doubt for 1 minute that there is lots of deals on the table that will go out because that's the way the transfer market works. I'm sure Jeff would tell me better than that, better than me, I should say. But at the end of the day, the deals will go out and it will take time. Some of the players ain't even back yet. I mean, all Neil has to concentrate on is getting what he can in before the 25th. And the business will carry on, I'm sure, into July. And I'm sure there's probably one or two deals that have already done, in a sense, but they won't be spoken about or they won't be told about. So to start sort of worrying about it, fans worry about it every year, always saying in the close season, when are we going to... But because we need a few more this year than we have done, it's panicking people even more.
Do you think Neil needs more money? I mean, other people online are saying that the club's issue in the transfer market is about a lack of funding from a major sponsor. We're hearing that Husky, who also sponsor Formula One, could be sniffing around. Would that change things? Would you accept a big investment?
I don't think that is the main issue. The main issue, I think, where Neil's concerned is, I'm afraid, the online community, it is dominated by moaners.
It's very true.
And they have to find something to moan about.
They do, yeah.
Neil's been the manager for 4 years, three absolutely superb seasons. Yeah. One season that was a struggle to watch. You know, I've confessed to that. But Neil's outbursts after the last game and the game before last shows you that he was as frustrated as we were.
Yeah.
It wasn't entertaining, and he knows it's got to be changed. Now, as to when in the summer you do it, when you can do it early, it is wonderful because you've got them back for the whole of the pre-season. But it isn't always possible. Sometimes it works out, sometimes it doesn't. I can be sure that he is working very hard to get some across the line, but very often the deals get done on the 1st of July, the day after people's contract actually ends.
Yeah.
We do need players. It would be nice to have them for pre-season. It would be nice to take them to Portugal. But the key day is the first game of the season. And I feel sure that they're looking in the right places. Obviously, a big sponsor. Obviously, John still wanting to put some money Neil's way. It would all help. But what about the goalkeeper from Ipswich? Did we mention him earlier? Bill Kulski.
Yeah, yeah.
Right? I mean, if we do pay £1.5 million for him, that, I bet that's used up our transfer budget. And we need more than one player. So The key to next season is going to be the quality of the recruitment we do this summer. That's my opinion. I don't blame Neil one bit. I think he was as frustrated as we all were at the kind of stuff we were serving up last year.
I genuinely believe, Jeff, that Neil's probably got the biggest budget given to him this summer that's been at Millwall for a long while. I'm not, you know, when we're talking millions with Millwall, it might be 3 or 4, but that's 3 or 4 million more than I think we've spent in a long while.
For sure.
If we spend 4 million, it would be, I think I'll have to sit down for a while. But the fact that the rumours are that we're offering 1.5 for Jamil Lowe, Bartowski will cost, I'm sure, a million at least if we're lucky, because I believe a year or two ago someone was touting him for 3 million. Not, you know? So we're talking for Millwall in terms of monetary, quite substantial amounts. But we are a club that get the better out of the Jamil Lowe's at 60 grand. You know what I mean? We get with your Lee Gregory's, your Steve Morrison's,
your Neil Harris's.
All of them come from that sort of region. Fingers crossed we got one or two of them lined up in the pipeline.
I doubt if we'll have a budget of £4 million to spend on players.
Jeff, you woke me up.
I can't see that. But the calibre of the recruitment will be decisive. And I think I said when I was last on, John, that if a mistake was made, it was that we started the season with too few options up front. And we knew that. And in January, we were unable to fix that because we got turned down by a player. That was well publicised, I think. There was another one knocking around as well. And I don't think the options we had, if you compare them to the teams that did well in our division, that had 4 and 5 players, even Ipswich had more options up front than we did, and they finished bottom. You were stuck with, a Steve Morrison who wasn't as good as he was previously. I've chosen my words carefully because he's a hero of mine.
Yeah.
And who else was there to go with Lee Gregory? And I don't think there was another championship calibre striker to put in there. That's my personal opinion. So recruitment will be key. Mm.
And recruiting not just goalkeepers but strikers. Encouraging to hear that you could be in for both. We're going to deal with some more transfer business later in the show. But coming up, it is time for Fan in the Boardroom.
This is Love Sport.
You're listening to the Millwall Fan Show here on Love Sport Radio. You're with me, Johnny Burrow and Darren James, Ted Robinson and Jeff Burnage of No One Likes Us Talking. And just quickly, let's touch on some more transfer business. We're hearing that Barnsley's Dimitri Kavare is supposedly a £750,000 target for the club. The right-back was named in the League One Team of the Season for 2018-19. Would that be a good piece of business?
Haven't seen enough of him to say I want to spend nearly £1 million on him. But one good thing, if we do take in a right back, I'd love to see Romeo played in his right position as a right midfielder or even as a right wing back. If Neil was to change the formation, he'd be a terrific right wing back.
We've lost Conor McLaughlin, haven't we, who was an international right back. So I'm sure there was a kid, was it Brown?
James Brown
coming through. I like the look of him as a young lad, and he was playing at right back. But you know, this kid, I'm a bit like Darren. I've not seen enough of him to say that this year. I do know Barnsley weren't a bad side last year and played some good football when I see him. We done a similar thing, didn't we? Get James Meredith off of Bradford when he was in the League One Player of the Year.
Well, so was Conor McLaughlin.
Exactly. Yeah. Right. So maybe it's a thing that
I have to say. Most of what you read in the newspapers at this time of the year has been put there for a reason. It doesn't bear much resemblance to the truth, I'm afraid. We love reading it. Of course we do. It's fascinating. But I doubt this one. And the reason is, I think Marlon's playing in his correct position. We've just signed Danny McNamara on another contract.
Yeah,
he's an out-and-out right back. He's ready. James Brown was on loan for a couple of clubs last year. I think he's got another year. I think there's a good chance that McNamara might overtake him in the pecking order.
Well said.
Yeah.
So I doubt very much that right back is a priority for Neil. I think he's got 4 other positions he wants to fill before he goes for a right back. So I doubt that one.
And it's a lot. It is a lot of money.
is a lot of money. I would like to have seen us get Todd Kane from Chelsea, 25-year-old, on loan last season at Hull. He's done the rounds on loan. He was at Notts Forest previously. He's been abroad in Holland. Yesterday, I saw reports that Aston Villa are in for him. So my wish for the last 3 years. In fact, when we were going out for Harry Kane, just before we got him, he was on my list. The two Canes, it would have been great. Kane at right.
Kane.
Two Canes.
He's been released, hasn't he? I think from Chelsea. He's just been released. Yeah.
In Lowe and Cavare, whether or not these are reliable rumours, you are being consistently linked with players from the top end of League One this season. Is that the right kind of places for you to be recruiting from?
Yeah. What Neil likes to go for is someone who wants to prove themselves, who's ambitious, who's not... A bit like himself, a bit like Paul Moody was saying to us not long ago, he came from non-league football and into football at a late sort of age, a bit like Steve Morrison did, thinking about it. And they've got that hunger, that desire. And if you want to be a Millwall player, I think that's the number one characteristic you need to have, a hunger and desire to be out there and want to play. So giving these boys an opportunity, sometimes a little bit late in their career, maybe, is just the right sort of thing for Millwall to do.
I think last season, I think we're a bit unfair on the team in general. I think they showed a lot of heart and a lot of guts and a lot of desire to stay up. I think it was quite an achievement to stay up. So I think we need a bit more quality now rather than more heart and guts. I think we've got plenty of that. The reason we're going for the top of League One, I think, is about wages. Everyone knows we've got possibly the second lowest budget in the division. The reason you've got the second lowest budget in the division is the wages you pay. Most other Championship teams' players are being paid at least as much or more than ours are.
Well, even some of the young, kids that the Premiership sides want to loan to us are probably on more money than some of our players, aren't they?
Much more.
Yeah.
Much more. And I think that's what drives where we're looking. So, look, it's a difficult job. Recruitment is key and we need brilliant recruiters. And... look, I mean, I'll give you an example. Only one club was in for Virgil van Dijk when he was being sold by Celtic, and that was Southampton. I'd love to know how they came to that conclusion, because they absolutely got that one spot on. Yeah. We've got to be as good as that.
When you say recruiters, at the Premier League level, for example, at Leicester, Craig Shakespeare was always touted as the mastermind behind Mahrez and Kante. We know that there are hundreds of people working behind the scenes, not just scouts, but directors of football and so on. At Millwall, is there a similar kind of setup, or does more responsibility lie with Harris?
We used to have one of the best, Bob Pearson. I mean, Jeff, he was absolute. If anyone could spot talent, Bob Pearson could. I'm not sure how the setup works now, but I know there's a lot of people behind the scenes that are punching in numbers and whatever into things, saying their stats and whatever. And I would say there's probably more groundwork done now, whereas Bob just had an eye for a talent and went, that kid's got it. You know, I mean, if you can do that, and these people were always underestimated within football, there's no doubt about it. Michael Calvin done a brilliant book about scouts and whatever. They go unnoticed, they go unheard of in lots of respects, but they actually do a fantastic job for football clubs. So, but coming back to Jeff's point, recruitment is absolutely vital, always has been for us, because we have to go into what is really a limited area in market-wise compared to what is a massive market, but we're only in a small part of it, and we have to get it right. We can't really afford to take too many gambles and get them wrong. If you know what I mean.
Yeah, Bob was a genius in his in his day, and it was very different then. I was worked closely with him, and we were very rarely in competition with another club for a player he was after. And I don't think that happens today. I think the organisation of our scouting and recruitment is much more intense than it was then. Gut feeling.
The other thing you were saying to me a little bit earlier outside about the youngsters, that, you know, these big Premiership boys are picking our youngsters off before they're getting anywhere near the first team. And Jeff was mentioning that earlier.
Well, let's touch on this now, Jeff. You were telling us that there's a 16-year-old and a 14-year-old lad who've both been poached by Manchester City.
Poached is a pejorative word. Frankly, look, football's a sport and a business, and it's been tipping more and more towards business in our lifetimes. How do you deny a family that live in inner London from moving to Manchester City, where they are paid very well and their futures are guaranteed? It's difficult to say to a lad, no, you can't do that. We did sell Darko Giarbi. He's a Catford boy, to Manchester City in the autumn. I don't know what the kind of compensations are. They're not transfer fees, by the way. They're compensations for the training you've done with them. It's a legal nicety, I think. But at the moment, young Samuel Edozie is coming to the end of his under-16 year, and has been speculation in the newspapers that both Chelsea and Manchester City have identified him. And it's a great pity. It's nice when one of our own actually breaks through to the first team and then moves on, Tim Cahill being a good example. But I have to say, that can be a mistake. We mentioned earlier Gambia. Which Millwall player ended up as a Gambian international? Cherno Samba. Yeah. And I do know that the club could have had £250,000 from Liverpool when he was 16. It was decided to turn it down and keep him.
A lot of money, well, in
him. It would have been a great deal. Hindsight's 2020, and at the time, even I know, if only from Championship Manager, how good Cherno Samba was supposed to be. If he had been even half as good as he was meant to be, £250,000, even in those days, wasn't enough, surely.
Well, the point I was making was, with hindsight, you'd make different decisions, don't you? But, I mean, by the way, dear old Cherno is back in South London, and he played in that Wonderwall Cup game at the Den the other week, which is a wonderful occasion, by the way. All tribute to the people that organised that. It was a great day seeing some of our former players not quite in their prime.
Yeah,
was quite amusing. But Cherno played and Cherno scored. I think it was always his ambition to score in a Millwall shirt at the Den. Well, he finally did it, aged about 40.
Yeah. But as a fan, though, Johnny, this is one of the things that I despair at in football. What's been, Jeff quite rightly said, football in our age has moved away to into business and that. But what that business has done, and certainly with these youngsters, has denied us that great feeling of seeing a 17, 18-year-old come into Millwall's thing and you think, oh, we got a player here, look at him. And he gets to play 100 games for Millwall before one of the big boys comes along the team. Now they're taking them at 14, 16 years of age. So you never get to see these boys. And a lot of these boys actually finish up going on the scrap heap to a certain extent, but they never fulfil their ambition, because I think sometimes the big boys actually take them away and out of their comfort surroundings too early.
Chelsea did it with Walker, the goalkeeper we had. Very talented goalie. He went way too soon. He ended up Colchester, injured. Yeah. Don't know where he is now, but he was really talented. And the other guy we had who I would like to have seen us play in the first team was David Amu. And he got snapped up way too early.
Mm. But by Liverpool?
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, but if you produce a player that can earn a living in the top four divisions, that's an achievement on its own. It's not easy to come up with a prediction of who's going to be good enough for the top half of the Premier League. The margins are very small. David Amu was great in our youth team. Sam Walker was great in our youth team, but they've both got decent careers. They're both still playing. I mean, David Amu's just had another transfer to another lower division team.
Yes.
He was a sprint champion as a schoolboy. That was his main
asset. That always helps.
That's quite an advantage, really, yeah.
But one of the things that sometimes disappoints is that if you can, in some way or another, keep hold of those players till they're in the first team, you do get more money, you know. Charlton managed to hang on to Joe Gomez long enough.
Yes, they did.
Right, for example. And there are other examples. But, look, I sense that the academy is doing a great job at the moment, and I think we're bound to get some of these lads through into the first team.
I've just seen someone I want to sign, Johnny.
Well, it's a sentence I haven't been able to say for about a decade. Henri scores for France. It is 4-0 to France women versus South Korea in the opening game of the Women World Cup. An absolute beauty of a girl.
I wonder if we can afford her, Johnny.
I think she'd fit right into the team. She jinks past one and curls the ball from 20 yards into the far right-hand top corner. Glorious finish.
Everyone knows I've been a big supporter of women's football for a long, long time. Took quite a bit of mocking for it, but if you watch this stuff, you know,
the technical ability is superb.
If you can stand to watch Serena Williams as well as Roger Federer, that's the comparison I would make. Mm. Some of these girls are great to watch. And tomorrow night, England versus Scotland in the World Cup, in the Women's World Cup.
Sunday night,
I beg your pardon. I can't wait. And by the way, there is some news on the Lionesses. I'm hopeful that there'll be some good news coming out in the next week or two about what level the Lionesses will be able to play at next season. It won't be in the Championship, but maybe it won't
not
be as bad as we first thought.
Well, that would be some very good news indeed. I just quickly want to come back to the very good point, guys, that both Ted and Darren made about players going too soon, getting, I won't say poached, but moving to different teams and not making it. There are obviously countless examples when that happens, but there are also Jadon Sancho, Watford to Manchester City, Manchester City to Dortmund, now playing for England, Raheem Sterling, QPR to Liverpool, Liverpool to Manchester City, now playing for England. It's not just that if you go as a 14-year-old, it's going to mess you up. I guess it's a lot about the characters of these kids because you are so young.
One of the things you have to cope with is that those players are living in inner London, sometimes in some quite difficult areas, and go to quite difficult schools and have some quite difficult friends. You've mentioned Joe Gomez and Jadon Sancho. They both grew up within a couple of miles of Millwall's ground. There's no doubt it's a hotbed of football. Joe Gomez went to Charlton rather than us, and Jadon Sancho went to Watford rather. But he went to Watford at age 8. You know, that's how difficult it is. Raheem Sterling grew up in Wembley on the Chalk Hill estate. It does happen. The Premier League teams have got so much money, they can spend fortunes on recruitment and identifying the right people. In my day, it used to be, we're not very happy if they get picked for England under 15s.
Because everyone will notice.
Because everyone sees them. Yeah. Nowadays, that's no different. Everyone sees everybody because of the amount of resources they've got to do it with.
I remember talking to Scott Fitzgerald like on one of our Lions live shows and that, and we was talking about the FA did bring out a thing at one point where they said that young lads up to a certain age couldn't play for a side further than so many miles away. But football being football, that somehow or the other they got round it, or they
buy the parents a house and then you go around the corner.
I'm just personally, having been a father and that, and my grandchildren coming up there. I wouldn't want my 14-year-old disappearing up north somewhere because somebody wants them. I get what Jeff said. You know, if you come from a council estate in Catford or something these young lads that are going now, it's a dream thing from that. But I wouldn't want my son. I just think it's not fair on the kids to a certain extent. It's hard to argue because money talks. But also,
they move the parents with
them. I know. It is difficult, but maybe I'm a Millwall boy.
They didn't used to move the parents years ago, did they? They put them in digs back in the days of...
George Best coming over from Northern Ireland. Yeah. I remember seeing a documentary on that, and he was homesick and wanted to go back to Belgrade.
A lot of players didn't actually make it because they couldn't be without their pet cat. Yeah. And their tortoise and their parents.
Yeah, imagine that, a career ending because of an absence of a tortoise. Coming up, what kind of shell are Millwall going to have next season? We're talking kits. Is it going to be stripes? Is it going to be hoops? Is it going to be plain? Who knows?
This is Love Sport.
It's the Millwall Fan Show here on Love Sport Radio, and it's all well and good us speculating about which players are going to be wearing the Millwall kit next season. But what's the kit going to look like? What are we hoping for? What are we expecting?
Blue and white. That's what we're going to do. I've heard of little rumours and whatever, as you always do, that it's blue with white sleeves. A bit like Ipswich's old kit. I'm not sure if Ipswich were Macron, but I remember having conversations about new kits and whatever, and that a few years ago when we was dealing with Millwall and talking about what we was going to, and they give the fans a chance to, but they all have so many sort of templates for kits. It might be for a training kit. It could be a, so Macron will only have a certain amount of things. It's unusual to be allowed to design your own kit like we did the other year. So you'll get them worked out. But I've heard it's blue or white. I've heard the second kit is all white. And I've heard the third kit is red.
Mm. I want a first kit of all white before my time, but 1971-72. I've wanted it for years. We've got to bring it on.
We've always been successful. Well, to a certain extent, we've been quite successful in the all white kit. We got promoted with Paul Moody. We 71-72 was it when we nearly got promoted to the old First Division was all white. I've always loved it myself.
We chose the all white kit because we were trying to emulate Real Madrid at the time.
It's not
is that true?
Chocolate cheese sort of comes to mind.
We have had some of these people here with me can tell me when it was. We have done the blue shirts with white sleeves at some point.
We did. Was it not the Docklands time, was it?
Might have been.
Might have been around about that time. I think we did.
My favourite ever kit was the very all blue, no ornamentation, blue 67-8. I like it because Keith Weller wore it, and that's good enough for me.
Yeah.
So and that goes back to recruitment, Johnny. 1967.
What, recruiting the right kit man, the right kit designer?
1967, that was a recruitment bonanza.
That was our best.
Brian King, Keith Weller, Derek Posse, Dennis Burnett, all in 2 weeks.
Yeah.
Right? And replacing people like Lenny Julians and Alex Stepney and Brian Snowden.
Yeah.
When you get a run of players like that who all come in a wave, how much of that is to do with the fact that the others have gone? And you can turn around to them and go, well, we've already signed X and Y, so how about you become Z?
That's a good point.
Yeah, I think it's like a lot of things in football. And you get a bit of momentum and it can snowball a little bit. I mean, that time that Jeff was talking about there, the quality of them players was exceptional. I'm not sure that all of them had already made their names in any sort of form, if you know what I mean. But it was a prime time of really getting a group of players that were quality coming together. There's two ways of doing it. The other way that we done it was when we had your Tim Cahills and Lucas Neils and all come through, like a bit like Man United, you know, all youngsters come through together with a few good experienced people, and they was exceptional guys that all went and had very good careers in football, like, you know. So that's the way to do it. But I'd love a close season like that one that Jeff just mentioned, a few of them players coming in.
Yeah, I mean, in more recent times, more people on listening here can remember 1987, the year, the summer before we got promoted into the First Division, when we signed Tony Cascarino, Steve Wood, George Lawrence.
Yeah.
Who's the other one? Great signing.
Came in. Hold on.
Can't remember. But in
Terry
the few,
Hurlock,
in the few months before it, we signed Jimmy Carter and Terry Hurlock. So there were six players within a few months. You're right, Johnny. There is momentum. Sometimes players want to see who you're signing and how good are you going to be, which is why doing it now in the first week of June is difficult. But if you can do it, it's wonderful because it does set up a reaction. You know, oh God, Plummer, you've signed him and him.
In fairness, 30, 40 years ago, probably the players were in Margate or Bournemouth or Brighton. You could get hold of them quite quickly, although there are no mobile phones. Now they're abroad, they're in Dubai, they're in Cyprus, they're somewhere else. So maybe that's got a bearing as well.
But we mentioned earlier about players going to the very big clubs. If there's one thing that happened during my time that I regret bitterly, well, there's few actually, but one of them is the removal of the limit on how many players you could loan out. When we signed the likes of those players, if they were in the reserves for a couple of years, not in the first team, they were on their way. Mm. Now, you're on loan till you're 24, 25. Chelsea are alleged to have had 40 players out on loan last season.
Yeah.
And some of those 40 players will be playing for the Millwalls and the Wimbledons and the Charltons. 18 and 19 in the first team. Doesn't happen now.
But you're right, the loan market, if you look at the sides from our division who played in the playoff final, how many loanees did Aston Villa and Derby have in their teams?
Six between them.
That's what I mean. That's the sort of way football's gone. And I remember not too long ago, everyone saying, oh, I don't really want to get involved in the loan market. Neil himself has said he would rather have someone to sign. But the loan market's a massive thing in football this day, mainly because a lot of players are scooped up early.
Well, as part of that conversation about recruitment, part of the conversation being that Harris isn't going to have millions and millions and millions, perhaps the loan market is the place where QPR should be looking. Where's QPR come from? Well, QPR will be looking there.
Quarter pound
Millwall
of rubbish.
In particular, pound of rubbish. Millwall are still looking at the likes of Jamal Lowe, and even as they wave goodbye to David Martin, there are more keepers on the way. Join us next week on the Millwall Fan Show.
Thanks for downloading this podcast from Love Sport Radio. For more, go to lovesportradio.com for all the latest podcasts, news and views. Or for more, follow us at Love Sport Radio on Twitter.